found is that it has had a profound impact on how I understand the whole story that we're a part of. And I want to read it to you. I want to make one more comment, though, that Everett Fox, who did the translation, has commented in his notes that these original texts, these ancient texts, were written to be heard. They were almost written like a poem or a song, keeping in mind that someone would be hearing these. They may not be reading them like we read them. These would be stories that would be told. They were recorded in a way that was meant to be heard. And so what I'm going to invite you to do is just to listen today as I read Genesis 1 through about chapter 2, verse 4. You can close your eyes. You can wander. You can lie down. You can do whatever you like. But I just invite you to listen as I read Genesis 1. With this in mind, okay? Here we go. At the beginning of God's creating of the heavens and the earth, when the earth was wild and waste, darkness over the face of ocean, rushing Spirit of God hovering over the face of the waters, God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw the light, that it was good. God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. There was setting, there was dawning, one day. God said, "Let there be a dome amid the waters, and let it separate waters from waters." God made the dome and separated the waters that were below the dome from the waters that were above the dome. It was so. God called the dome heaven. There was setting. There was dawning. Second day. God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered to one place, and let the dry land be seen." It was so. God called the dry land earth. And the gathering of the waters he called seas. God saw that it was good. God said, "Let the earth sprout forth with sprouting growth, plants that seed forth seeds, fruit trees that yield fruit after their kind, and in which is their seed upon the earth." It was so. The earth brought forth sprouting growth, plants that seed forth seeds after their kind, trees that yield fruit, in which is their seed after their kind. God saw that it was good. There was setting, there was dawning, third day. God said, "Let there be lights in the dome of the heavens to separate the day from the night, that they may be for signs, for set times, for days and years, and let them be for lights in the dome of the heavens to provide light upon the earth." It was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light for ruling the day and the smaller light for ruling the night, and the stars. God placed them in the dome of the heavens to provide light upon the earth, to rule the day and the night, to separate the light from the darkness. God saw that it was good. There was setting, there was dawning, fourth day. God said, "Let the waters swarm with a swarm of living beings, and let fowl fly above the earth across the dome of the heavens." God created the great sea serpents and all living beings that crawl about, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and all the winged fowl after their kind. God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Bear fruit and be many, and fill the waters in the seas, and let the fowl be many on earth." There was setting, there was dawning, fifth day. God said, "Let the earth bring forth living beings after their kind, herd animals, crawling things, and the wildlife of the earth after their kind." It was so. God made the wildlife of the earth after their kind, and the herd animals after their kind, and all crawling things of the soil after their kind. God saw that it was good. God said, let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the heavens, animals, all the earth, and all crawling things that crawl about upon the earth. God created humankind in his image. In the image of God did he create it. Male and female did he create them. God blessed them. God said to them, bear fruit and be many and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the heavens, and all living things that crawl about upon the earth. God said, here, I give you all plants that bear seeds that are upon the face of all the earth, and all trees in which there is tree fruit that bears seeds. For you they shall be for eating. And also for all the living things of the earth, for all the fowl of the heavens, for all that crawls about upon the earth in which there is living being, all green plants for eating. It was so. Now God saw all that he had made, and here it was exceedingly good. There was setting, there was dawning, the sixth day. Thus were finished the heavens and the earth with all of their array. God had finished on the seventh day his work that he had made, and then he ceased on the seventh day from all his work that he had made. God gave the seventh day his blessing, and he hallowed it, for on it he ceased from all his work that by creating God had made. These are the begettings of the heavens and the earth, their being created, at the time of Yahweh, God's making of earth and heaven. What did you notice? You're allowed to answer. Sunset, sunrise, setting, dawning. Did you notice that the setting comes first? That's always something that's been interesting to me. Giving. Beautiful. Yeah.
He said, and it was so.
He said, and it was so. What did you learn about God from listening to that? It's like an art form, building and making, nurturing. Yeah. Anything else?
It's always good.
It was good. He's enjoying it. Yeah. He's delighting in it, of course, yeah. Right.
When he was creating man, he said it was exceedingly good.
Exceedingly good.
Above everything else that he created.
Exceedingly good. Have you ever thought of yourself as exceedingly good? What vision of humanity, if humans are supposed to represent, are made in the image of God, what's our posture meant to be towards the rest of the world? Do we echo that joy, that delight, that wonder? Do we see goodness? Do we posture ourselves in that way towards creation? What are we meant to be as humans? As echoes of images, of reflections of God in our likeness.
And
what's our posture? Wonder? Appreciation? respect, enjoying it, the beauty. I went for a walk this morning as I was walking over here to set up chairs, and the sunrise, the way the pink was, the light of the sun was hitting the bottom of the clouds was just stunning. It reminded me of the work of Gerard Manley Hopkins' poem. One of his poems just came to mind, and it was just so beautiful. Here's my question: what are we meant to be? But we all know, don't we, that almost immediately after this, that wonder got fractured. That relationship of the humankind to Creator got fractured through a combination of deceit, naivety, distrust, FOMO, fear of missing out. And that there was a break that happened. And we were no longer in sync with that wonder, that spirit, that representation. Over time that relationship got marred and fractured and distorted. And we descended into a state of wanting to do things our own way. And have you ever noticed that in that passage, we don't actually learn what image of God really means? It doesn't give us much detail. It just says image of God. It doesn't tell us what being an image bearer really means, except for stewardship maybe, a little bit of authority of some kind. But we don't have any exemplars. We don't really have any examples. We don't get instructions. We don't get a list of things we should do. We don't have like a checklist of chores that we should do every day. We don't actually know what that means. Except thousands of years later, several thousand years later, a human shows up. That's why we have a season coming up of celebration. A human shows up. Oops, pardon me. And what do the scriptures say about the human? You see, the people that hung out with that human didn't really clue in for the longest time of who this human was. But in Colossians, after that human came and went, they started to understand, and they wrote songs about that human. And one of those songs is recorded in Colossians, and it goes something like this, starting in verse 15. He's the image of the invisible God. What? He's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and earth, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He's before all things, and in him all things hold together. Image of God? What? We were made in the image of God. We were made in the image of Jesus Christ, the Creator. What are we meant to be? This has been steeping in me for several years, like a cup of tea, soaking into my soul, changing me slowly. What are we meant to be? I could go on in Colossians because it talks about why he came. Why did he come? To reconcile himself, to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. He wanted to restore us to that relationship that got broken. Can you believe how amazing that relationship is? Can we imagine? Can we enter in imaginatively into what that must be? What we were meant to be? So the verse for today that came to my mind immediately was Ephesians 4. 21 to 24. Actually, the phrase comes right out of Ephesians 4:24. But I'm going to back up and read just a little bit. Let me just check my notes here, make sure I haven't missed anything. I think we're okay. So if you read through even the first chapter of Ephesians and you really let it sink in, and that's where we get this prayer, actually, open the eyes of my heart, because the author of Ephesians, assumed to be Paul at this point, I won't go into the authorship debate, but says, I pray, he's praying for the people, the believers in Ephesus, that your hearts may be opened, that the eyes of your heart may be open. Open the eyes of our heart, Lord, that the eyes of our heart would be opened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints. And he goes on to talk about incomparable great power for those of us who believe. And then further on in chapter 2, he talks about God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus. Wait a minute. Let that sink in. We are made in the image of Jesus Christ, and where is he seated? We participate. We're invited into the life of God. Where is he seated? At the right hand of the Father. Do you believe that about yourself? I don't think I'm making anything up. But here's the line from Ephesians 4. So I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. They're darkened in their understanding, separated from what? The life of God. What? Okay. The life of God, because the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of the hearts, having lost all sensitivity, they've given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust for more. You, however, did not come to know Christ that way. Surely you heard of him and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new. We were meant to be made new. Jesus came to make us new. He came to make you new. To be made new in the attitude of your minds. Okay, I'll keep going. We pause along the way. And to put on the new self, created what? To be like God. In true righteousness and holiness. Put on the new self, which was what? Created to be like God. Just sit with that for a minute. What's the image of Jesus? What's the image of God? What do we see as the image of God in Christ? Is it, yes, he could heal and do things. Are we going to be the equivalent of the Father? No, that's not the message. But we are invited to be human the way Christ is human. The image of God in Christ is our model for what it means to be human. That's what we're meant to be. That involves suffering. That involves love. That involves acknowledging our limits and not trying to be superhuman. We're just being human. In Christ. That old self, that's not the real you. We are not our truest selves in that old self. Our truest selves are in Christ. Our truest selves will come to life and be revealed as we participate with God by the power of the Spirit in becoming new. It means we have to change. But what does it mean for me to become new? What does it mean for you to become new? That's a mystery that will unfold over the ages. I simply wanted to invite you today to think about this question. What are we meant to be? In light of this image of God in Christ that we're invited into, and that's why in the succeeding chapters and verses we're told to put off this old stuff, the bitterness, the rage, the anger, the, you know, backbiting, all the stuff that is part of the old self. Because that's not really who we are. Not in Christ. Our true self, who we were meant to be, is revealed as we participate in the life of God, as we participate in Christ. Now, we can't unpack all that here today. I just simply wanted to plant the seed. As we come into Advent, to think about this image of God. Right? Jesus is the image of God as a human. We need the power of the Spirit to do this. This is not something we do on our own. I'm not pretending that we earn our way into salvation. But when we acknowledge Christ for who he is and we turn to look at him, we begin to change. And if we keep our eyes fixed on him and we trust him for who he is, we begin to change. If we let him in, we begin to change and we become new as we put off the old and put on the new, who we were actually meant to be. There's an author that I follow, and for a number of reasons, I trust his work and thought. He put it this way, and by the way, the church fathers said similar things, so the early church said things similar things, but Kenneth Tanner has put it this way, Jesus wants us to be human as God is human. So I don't know what your career prospects are, but let me just suggest that the bigger picture is this, and that if I think the world has yet to see what it would be like for millions of people to live like this, I think the world has yet to feel what it would be like to have millions of images of God moving around through the forests. Does the forest know when we come in that there's an image of God in the house? I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. All I can tell you is what I wanted to share with you is the beginning of an imagination, how my imagination of the world as I've come to understand it in Christ is changing. And I want to invite you into that and to think about it, to pay attention, because I think as you read Ephesians, you're going to find that over and over and again. There are all these illusions and insights that start to unpack, and all of a sudden they just pop. And it's like when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When you start to see this, all of a sudden you see it everywhere. And the scriptures come alive because all of a sudden you see, wait a minute, what? We are invited to participate in the life of God. Are you kidding me? Right. So what are we meant to be? We are meant to be representatives of God, that artist, the one who loves his creation. We are meant to reflect the life of Jesus, who showed us what it means to be human. That's our calling. That's what we were meant to be. And we will have the fullest and richest life if we live into that with him by the power of the Spirit. as you go into Advent, may that somehow sneak into your reflections and bless you. Thank you for letting me share.